Improvise.
Musical.
Comedy.
What are the words?
Making up as you go along.
Do you know what you're talking about?
Rhyming.
Choruses.
Verses.
Bridges.
It's words. It's music.
Sing it. It's musical sometimes. Hello.
Hello and welcome to Musical Improv Comedy.
And this week we are bringing you an exciting glimpse into the world of improvisation in early music.
So a while ago, I think you'll remember, we did a series of podcasts on different genres, and it made us think about how far down the kind of research route we could go.
Yeah, and we made various attempts to contact various people about early music in Brighton, and we didn't get very far. But since then,
the wonderful Andrew Robinson of the Brighton Early Music Community Choir let us in. He gave us a glimpse to what goes on in the world of choral early music.
Not just a glimpse, in fact, because when it came for time for the session, Andrew told us that he had a little presentation that he'd prepared about early music and improvisation in early music, and it seems to have sparked off quite a little interesting project.
Yeah, it's really exciting. Mm. So Andrew, like a good choir master should, went off and researched and thought, you know, is it going to be relevant for his choir? And it turns out that much early music, that type of early music, is rooted in improvisation.
Yeah.
And that's what we learned all about.
It is. So we're going to play you edited highlights of that wonderfully interesting hour.
Yes, for someone who's never really been educated in the world of classical music. I've been a little intimidated by it, but what I found really refreshing and lovely was just how much we were welcomed into this choir.
Yeah.
And how friendly and lovely everybody was, but yeah. Also it made me realise how relevant what we do could be for people, because when people have such reverence for singing things exactly as written,
mm-hmm.
and not really realising the variations you can have,
yeah.
I felt like we could breathe some life into it.
Yeah.
And I felt maybe Andrew sort of shared that, really, as you'll hear in his seminar.
And I felt that it was really interesting that while we feel like we're doing something new and exciting and discovering what's possible if you get a load of people together to sing, blah, 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 turns out that maybe we're just uncovering an old and dusty road that the leaves have blown over the history of time.
How poetic, Joe.
Thank you very much. Anyway, without further ado, here they are.
So let me get started with improvisation in early music. When Heather spoke to me and said we should do a podcast on improvisation in early music, my initial reaction was, well, it would be far too hard to improvise the type of music that we sing. And of course, I had this in mind. We couldn't improvise that. That would be too difficult for us. And it would be even harder to improvise something like this. Palestrina's Kyrie from his Missa Eterna Christi Munera. My first response to Joe and Heather was, well, we can't do improvisation, because, I mean, imagine improvising that, impossible. But the more that you think about it, the more you investigate, you find out that both of these forms were originally improvised. The point about improvisation is that you need to be comfortable with the musical language before you can improvise. You can't just make things up unless you have culture, where you know what's coming, you know what notes could be coming, what notes could fit, what rhythms could be coming, what rhythms could fit. And in fact, you'll see with the ground bass, it's part of our lives all the time. We have ground bass cadences everywhere, so it's part of our musical language. But organum, which is where you sing, you have what's called a cantus firmus, which is a chant tune slowed down, and then above it you have improvised ornamentation. It's a lot further from our own harmonic and musical language, and so there's no way that we could improvise that tonight. We're not even going to try. But they did centuries. Where you have notation, there you have a basis for improvisation, but also you have a limiting factor. So if something's written down, well, maybe that's what you should do. So there is an inverse relationship between notation and improvisation. So the cheaper notation is, the more widespread notation is, the less improvisation there is. And the less notation there is, the more improvisation there is, by definition. In order to make that beautiful manuscript, this is on vellum, and vellum is made of sheepskin, dried sheepskin. So, one sheet would provide you with two pages. Okay? And if you look at this book, it's a gradual, it's got all the charts for the Roman Church. You've got probably 1,800 sheep that have gone into making up that book. So that's wildly expensive. Let alone all the time, you know, required to copy it out. So what we're approaching here is an understanding of the fact that actually my first reaction to German Handel was, well, you can't improvise other music because it's, you know, particularly politically really difficult. The economic realities of early music are that, well, most of it was improvised. Not only folk music, but also church music. And the main reason was, of course, cost. So before the invention of printing, so pretty much at the beginning of the Renaissance is when printing happens, all of the notation is highly expensive, and therefore there is a lot of improvisation. And then, of course, if you look at the Baroque period, which is part of early music, you know, we have Bach and Handel, Pergolesi here, Schütz, Buxtehude, and so forth, Corelli. All of these people are, you know, in a post-printing environment, and so the amount of improvisation is getting less. So it's about degrees of freedom. So from full improvisation, where there is nothing written down, and you essentially make it all up mostly, you then move to variation, where you have a theme, and you will then play with that theme rhythmically, you'll play with it melodically, you'll play with it harmonically, but you've still got a basis that you're working with. And then in the Baroque period, the degrees of freedom become less, and it's about ornamentation, so it's about little twiddles here and there. Maybe at the end you just finish off with something that's your own invention. One thing I did want to mention, though, is parody. Parody is really important. So when people are taking them in, that's a great example of improvisation at its creative best, and it happens in all periods. So what we see is that authority changes over time. We're talking about the authority of the performer and the authority of the composer. At the beginning, so before printing, the performer and the composer are pretty much the same person. So improvisation, well, that would be called music making. It would be called composition. So they were pretty much the same thing. But over time, as notation becomes cheaper and education gets better, the authority of the performer gets less, so he has less and less freedom, and in the end it's just ornamentation and maybe not even that, and the composer becomes this dominant figure. And you know, where we are today in our classical tradition, it's all about getting it right. It's all about, you know, making sure that we're absolutely doing what the dots say. So, if we go back to one of the pieces that we're working on right now, which is this song by Juan de Lencina, 15th century, so this is the late 15th century in Spain. The great thing about this is all we know is the tune and the harmonies, and we don't have any agreement on what time it should be in. There are different rhythmic settings of this, different rhythmic recordings of it. People take it at different speeds. We can do this pretty much how we like. So let's just warm up and sing this. So can you stand up? Okay, I'll give you one, two, three, one, two. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2.
Bye.
Now, how many people know this piece, Beata Spear, by Claudio Monteverdi? Okay, you will know it when you hear it. And if your eyesight's good enough, you'll be able to read the bass line, which goes bum 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 bum. And it goes like that through the whole piece. So this piece was made up on the same principle as we've just been improvising.
Thank you.
and this is possible.
To conclude
yes.
the early music podcast, we we said we wanted to research different types of music so that as improvisers we could improvise any kind of music.
Yes, we did.
A bit like in straight improvisation, you know, a lot of good improv teachers will just say, you know, every day is a lesson. Every time you go into a different place of work, listen to how people talk to each other, pick up on specifics. That's one of the great things about, I feel, theatrical improvisation is that, you know, you have a reason to be a student of life and be aware of everything and observe everything. So everything you portray is really rich.
Yeah.
A bit like, you know, if you were a method actor studying for a movie, you'd learn about that, except with improv you have to learn about everything. And that's a bit like what it's like with musical, this musical improv task that we've set ourselves. So I just feel like it's a real privilege to learn about all these different things that maybe I wouldn't have challenged myself to.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it will make me any better at improvising any music.
But it's damn interesting.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
And one of our ambitions is to get choirs not being afraid to do an improvised piece in their work.
Yeah.
And I definitely feel like that choir might take that and run with it.
I think so too. And I think they could improvise a genuinely good early music style piece.
Me too.
Perhaps as a parody. Perhaps as straight.
Well, we look forward to hearing that.